been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
Cairo. I've been there. Cairo.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
This is Rachel Herndon Dunn at the Missouri Times, back for another episode of the Hashtag MoLedge podcast, sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. I'm here with my co-host, Becky Lohman, and Missouri Times' own Ben Peters is glaring at me over the top of his computer. On this episode, we are continuing the Autumn of the Attorney with a very special guest, who I was not aware went to law school until very recently.
I'm glad you confessed that, because I didn't either.
I didn't either.
And I've worked with Jeff way too much to not know that, so spoilers. I'm glad I wasn't.
It's a well-hidden fact.
I've been looking for a reason to have this Twitter legend on the Hashtag MoLedge podcast for a while now, and we've got one. So welcome, Jeff Mazur.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
This
is the first time that being an attorney has paid off for me in any
finally.
Way.
Finally. This is it. So do you say it Mazur or Mazur?
Mazur.
Mazur.
Yeah.
Okay. That's important to know.
I mean, last episode I had some.
You were butchering the last name of Ellinger, not
yeah.
Ellinger.
So I've got it spelled phonetically in my phone now.
Mazur. This isn't honest to the original Polish, but Mazur is the more Americanized version, which we'll go with for MoLedge podcast.
That's fantastic. We love America, so.
Yes. So you've been in government, you've done the politics, you've done public unions, now you're at Launch Code. Mm-hmm. But before we get to Launch Code, I would like to talk about Amazon. So since our last podcast, Missouri put in its bid. It relies heavily on the Hyperloop. Hey, Ben, do we have a Hyperloop in the state of Missouri?
No, we don't.
We don't?
No.
So the state of Missouri put together a bid to get Amazon and bring in several thousand jobs that would all pay well over the median income in the state of Missouri. And it relies on all three of our cities across the middle of the state. It includes Kansas City, St. Louis, and Columbia, and it's Hyperloop. And so now that you're in tech, I presume that having Amazon in Missouri would be exciting, right?
Absolutely. No, I mean, so many jobs. For the same reason everybody else thinks it's cool. Set tech aside, right?
Yeah.
So working at a company where a workforce development is obviously your priority and goal, what do you see when you are working with other companies similar to Amazon, maybe to the not that magnitude, but what are they seeking from a trained workforce, and how much do you think that matters to Amazon?
No, there's a huge, huge problem, particularly as you get into middle to higher skill technology jobs, like software developers, people who are helping develop these products and maintain these high-tech applications, websites, internal infrastructure for organizations. And there's a huge need in places like St. Louis across not just tech companies, but what we don't think of as typical tech companies, companies like Anheuser-Busch or, you know, Centene, that have huge need for these things. And then, you know, you sort of amplify that by many times when you talk about a company like Amazon. But at its core, it goes back to this premise of a company like Amazon can't thrive in a place unless there is a line of sight to a massive numbers of highly skilled new people coming into the market to sort of serve their needs and do the things that they need done. And so it's true of every company, but, you know, Amazon, again, if you're talking about 50,000 employees, a huge number of whom are sort of tech-focused jobs, you really have to be prepared to do that. And I think a big part of where I hoped to push both the St. Louis and Kansas City applications for the Amazon HQ2 was around, hey, let's not just talk in the way we ordinarily do about the great higher education institutions we have in these states. That's important, and they are like really tremendous institutions. WashU, tremendous. St. Louis U, you know, UMKC, doing great things. But, you know, the reality is in those places, you graduate at the most 75, 80 people with computer science degrees a year. Those are the people who are going to take those coder jobs. And that's just not enough to sustain the sort of growth and sort of need that exists with a huge company like Amazon. So what you really have to do is think about what are the mechanisms that you have to create that sort of talent at scale and on an accelerated timeline. So forget about taking somebody 4 years to go through and get a CS degree to make them ready to be a software developer for Amazon. Like, you need to figure out a way in 6 months to get somebody from wherever they are to get the skills and get the job readiness to step into those roles so that they can amp things up quickly and get to the place where they need to be to really be successful in a place like St. Louis or Kansas City or Missouri broadly. And so quite apart from, I mean, that is what we do at LaunchCode, and what the sort of systems we've built are geared towards scaling rapidly and training people on an accelerated basis for these jobs. But even outside the context of LaunchCode, I think Amazon has to have a keen eye to that wherever they go. Can't just rely upon the ordinary models of training people for these sorts of jobs. You have to think differently and think in much bigger ways about how to do it in big numbers and do it quickly.
Just out of curiosity, you've kind of had a cloud view of the state of Missouri for a while now, whenever you worked for Nixon and all that jazz. Missouri is always changing, always developing, seems to be always improving, not to quote Lowe's or anything. But how has Missouri changed and maybe positioned itself better for companies like this, like over past 20 years?
So, I mean, I think if you look at what's happened in the last decade, in, again, think about first in St. Louis and Kansas City, the sort of depth that's developed around really focusing on making technology a key piece of growth in those two regional population centers. You have all the great work that's happened around Cortex, all the great work in St. Louis that's been built around the ag tech community and being really a national leader on that front. And all that stuff plays in, right? If you don't have that, then I think it becomes very attenuated to say, yeah, we can make a genuine bid and play for a company like Amazon or some other huge tech behemoth to come to our place. But you've seen the development and the investment of the business community, of civic leadership, of city leadership, to continually focus on putting resources in those places and think creatively about new things. I think you're going to see more there, you know, as people like Jason Hall, who, you know, was a leader in the business community in St. Louis, was in charge of Missouri Technology Corporation for a while, and has big ideas about how you really extend across the St. Louis from where this action is happening now in Cortex all the way to downtown, and really utilize this slack capacity that's there in the city and continue to drive things in. Same thing in Kansas City, really, in somewhat different ways, but you have the massive growth of huge tech companies like Cerner that can drive innovation, that can force an entire community to think differently about how they really scale up in terms of talent, how they think about tech as a driver for all the things that need to happen in business in a place. Think about Google Fiber and the investment that's been made there and the work that was done by city and civic leaders in order to be the place where that sort of investment gets made, and all of the downstream impacts that that's had in terms of really spinning up a more tech-focused business community in Kansas City. And then, again, leadership, people like Mayor James, who, you know, taking a creative approach to how to get attention of Amazon with his reviews. So I think you've got a lot to say that's been driving for some time. I think, you know, I'll say a nice thing here about the current administration in terms of the state of Missouri. You know, there was certainly a focus to think differently about how to approach this, whether to approach this at all. It was outside the box to think about a state application to the Amazon project. That wasn't a given that that would happen, and I think, you know, certainly there's this idea that every city that was over a million people was going to bid on this thing. You know, but they took a different approach, said, hey, let's roll the dice and let's think about it. And, you know, we have yet to see sort of what the outgrowth of all this stuff is going to be. But people like Drew Erdman, who are taking the time to think about all other kinds of innovative stuff around business development in the state and how they take a slightly different tack on what's been done in the past, is, I think, a good thing to have people thinking in that way. Again, we don't know. You know, it will be a while before we know what the impacts, if any, of are those things. But I think we've seen a lot of momentum. I don't think that, you know, you're in some ways, the way you view a thing or a place or a community will in some ways always be colored by what it was when you stepped into it. And I really moved back to Missouri full-time Christmas of 2004, the front end of the Matt Blunt era. So in some ways, my view of state government will always be covered by, like, Ed Martin, chief of staff, right? And so I think we're in a far different place today than we were in, whatever, you know, 2006. And so I think that we can be proud of the strides the state has made and where we sit, and the fact that we have a number of non-laughable approaches to a thing like the Amazon HQ2.
Yeah, something I've thought about a few times is that the tech world is very forward-thinking. You were just thinking about how creative it is, how there's all these big ideas. Just speculating, if you were a multi-billion dollar business, would you be receptive to a statewide bid like that?
Well, what does it mean, right? I guess that part of this is around the Hyperloop piece and saying that you don't have to confine yourself to any particular geography, right? That if you have a mechanism infrastructure in place to say, hey, this is essentially one huge metro area that's consistent of 4 million people between 5 million people between the regional populations of St. Louis and Kansas City, and you can agglomerate that together and make it one thing. Yeah, that's something that I guess you look at, but what does it actually mean for the company? I don't know. You're like, are you going to build a HQ2 and an HQ3 based on this? Like, probably not, right? So I think you're going to ultimately drill down to a place, and you may say, hey, the focus, the investment, and the vision that the state has shown with respect to putting this together makes us perhaps more likely to consider one of the two regional markets that is in that state, in Kansas City or St. Louis. But I'm not sure that, you know, you can say, hey, like Amazon, we're moving our thing to Missouri, and we're going to build, you know, we're going to build the headquarters in, you know, in Ashland on our old farm.
So LaunchCode has burst onto the scene. That's where you work now. You've touched on it a bit, but LaunchCode is a 6-month training organization, sure. And it'll teach you how to code in 6 months.
That's the idea. Yeah. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's cool. Like our main flagship class, and we have a variety of different programs, but basic idea is a 20-week class that's part-time. So people spend 6 hours a week in the classroom, spend 12 to 15 hours a week of work outside the classroom, learning to get the skills that they need in order to step into an entry-level job as a software developer. So we use this, what was called the flipped classroom model, where, you know, the typical, like when I went to college, I had lecture classes, right? And I sat with 300 people in Mizzou at an auditorium and basically watched a lecture, and I didn't interact with it at all. We use what's called flipped classroom model. So somebody at home basically watches the lecture material. They watch a video online or see these studios that are providing that lecture material. And then when they go in the class, it's a hands-on. It's like the homework part. You're working with fellow learners. You're working with instructors and teaching fellows to do hands-on problem solving and help other people, show other people. And so ideas can provide this training for free to people who have no past tech background or experience, but if they have baseline levels of foundational knowledge, can they do basic algebra, 10th grade math? Do you have basic logical reasoning and problem solving? I see.
I'm wondering if I would be an applicant for lunch.
Am I qualified for this?
I should have brought some sample.
Yeah. We'll see how we would have fared.
Can you manage, you guys have computers in front of you, you can probably manage the file system on those computers. That's like one of the baseline pieces of
ish.
I mean, right. If you've seen all the error codes that Missouri Times has had lately, should know I fixed them.
and that's something that I think is great about LaunchCode is I don't feel like you guys are attacking a certain demographic of people as much as you are attacking people that want to learn to code and want to work in and live in Missouri.
Totally. The subset of the universe of people that we're driving towards and trying to find is people who haven't had access to one of the traditional ways of getting a job in this field, right? If you had a chance to get a degree at WashU in computer science, you had an avenue into this, right? That works. The system works pretty good for you if you got that CS degree at WashU. You're going to find a job, and you're going to do great in the tech world. If you had the $13,000 to plunk down to pay for a for-profit boot camp, you're able to go to a General Assembly or a Galvanize or one of these many boot camps that's popped up, chances are that you're going to get a job out of that as a software developer. But a lot of people don't have $13,000 to plunk down and say, I'm just going to do this for the next 13 weeks, nothing else, quit my job, and then just do a full-time class, right? That's an avenue that is open to a fairly small universe of people. And the system works pretty good for you if you have your dad owns a tech company or whatever, right? If you have an amazing network of people who can find
things
you.
Things are probably pretty great for you if your dad owns a tech company.
Yeah, you may want to work, right? Those people who've had access to one of those opportunities, we're not really focused on that because we provide zero additional value for those folks by and large.
Right.
But it's for everybody else that doesn't have the WashU CS degree, that can't afford the time or money to go to a for-profit boot camp, that doesn't have a natural network of people who can connect them to jobs, to say, all right, here's a pathway that's truly, genuinely accessible to you. Doesn't really matter what your education was. We're agnostic about whether you have a high school degree or you went to college at all or you got a college degree. You really need to be committed to it, to be willing to put the work in because it's hard stuff to learn. But if you're willing to do that and sink the time, take the effort, then we're willing to deliver it to you for free. and in a format that allows you to do take care of whatever other responsibilities you have out there in the world, be it a part-time job, or for many people even a full-time job during the day, or family childcare responsibilities, or other sort of school environment. And so just trying to knock down that barrier for people who've been foreclosed from these opportunities, because we talk, our tech gets talked about all the time as a sort of democratizing influence and force, right? It gives people access to the economy and whatever. But that all is kind of true only to the extent that people can actually use technology to find a career and actually be able to step into that world and gain the skills to do it. If they can't do that, then all that, I think, is a little bit of a ruse and isn't really true about technology. So we're trying to knock down that barrier, and that's where we're really focused.
So I've been kind of following the Launch Code journey on social media, particularly on your Twitter. Mm-hmm. Before we talk about your Twitter.
I think, let's start here. Not perhaps the truest reflection of the Launch Code social
there
media presence.
There is actually
a blog.
Do you have that disclaimer that says, these are my own opinions, right?
My bio on Twitter says, good posts online, which I think undoubtedly is true. But that ranges a whole gamut from Launch Code stuff to Mizzou football to a bunch of other stuff that nobody wants to read. So I'm glad you're reading it, Rachel.
And as an aside, Launch Code does have its own Twitter @launch_code. And I saw on your Twitter that there was a hashtag geek gala.
Yes.
And it looks like there's a few geeks literally dancing, and looks like you've got this really cool facility.
Yeah.
Geeks like to party, too.
Yeah.
And embracing geekdom is something that's important, right? Like, everybody who's went to this party in some way or goes into one of our classes, they're like, you know what? I'm a geek. I want to learn to code and do this stuff that's generally thought of as geeky. And like, hey, let's hug up on it and make it, you know,
it's funny how I feel like that's become cool, though. Like, tech is cool. Coding is cool.
Yeah, it's kind of so flipped dorky, on it.
It's not, you know, you're not like a computer nerd. Like, if I know someone that codes, I'm like, you're kind of.
Kind of cool. Look at that.
I can't swear, but I would say you're pretty cool. I don't want to get bleeped.
I mean, I say that as, and I'm sure my jock husband will still, I will go home and be like, you're still a nerd.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to the nerd
up
bash.
Is down and left is right.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, I'll cop to it. Like, I'm a geek, but I have none of the technological skill that usually comes along as one of the positive benefits of being a geek.
There's no positive.
All the bad, none
of
the good. Yeah, exactly.
So a technological skill you do have is your alter ego to some is you are at JMaz.
Yeah.
And sometimes your Twitter name changes. Like, currently it's JMaz.
Yeah.
Jemise. Uh-huh. Like, are you going to drop an R&B album?
No, you know, I'd like to experiment with different spellings, you know, just see how it feels.
Okay.
Mostly I'm interested in, I'll be honest, mostly I'm interested in people not being able to simply search Jeff Mazur on Twitter and immediately find my account. They have
is
to
that
like,
really
have
why?
Halfway in.
There's another Jeff Mazur.
A little make you effort a little bit. That's interesting. I will
not just
make you work for it.
Yeah, make you.
Yeah,
work
you got to find a pathway in, right? Not just like searching me, like cyber stalking. Like, you got to have some connection somewhere else. Some, you know, I don't know, some gag or like a link from Scott Vaughn or whoever.
Well, you keep all of us on our toes. I'll see you were Portland Sykes.
Yeah.
Recently, and right. I saw Portland Sykes liking all of these tweets, and I'm like, who is this person? Why would I follow them? And then, you know, it takes me 24 hours to realize that it is our, you know, Missouri's very own Jeff Mazur.
My best really story I doubt he listens to this. I kind of hope he doesn't, because I'm going to share this story there. He probably wouldn't care, but this past year, the Christmas party, the very tail end of the Jay Nixon administration, he was kind to invite me and my family to the mansion for his Christmas party with a bunch of other former staff and people who've been with him for many years. And it was a very kind of fitting end to his administration. He was very cordial and talked a lot about the time we spent together. But as he like came up to me to greet me, the first thing that he told me wasn't like, hey, like, how's things going, whatever. It was like, hey, you know what was good? When you changed your Twitter name for a while there to JEF apostrophe, it was like this, like, Jeb thing. You remember Jeb, JEF apostrophe? And for a while, I just had Jeff, JEF apostrophe. And, like, that had, like, so I knew at that point that politics had gone way off the rails, because this was the thing that the governor of the state had chose to talk to me about at the Christmas party, was JEF exclamation point. So I may not find another display name that works as well as that one for people, but I'll keep trying.
Maybe you can bring it back every once in a while.
If Jeb comes back on the scene, if he runs again in 2020,
you mean
I'm
that he left the
in.
Scene, isn't he still?
He may be. He may go away from the Jeb exclamation point.
So something Ben and I have talked about a few times is, you have opinions and criticisms that may not align with a lot of people's, but I genuinely can't think of anyone off the top of my head who genuinely doesn't like you and isn't amused by your Twitter feed.
I'll give you a list.
He's like, let me show you my direct messages on my Twitter.
So, yeah, I mean...
That was a loaded question, so let's hear what your response is.
No, I feel genuinely about many of the things that I post about, but I think that, you know, this stuff can be a death fight if you want it to. Politics and disagreement and whatever. And maybe for a lot of people it is, but I don't think it has to be that. I'll say that I think what you say is true. I have way more... before Twitter existed for me here, the vast majority of the people I consider friends who I met from politics were people who shared my partisan or ideological views. Post Twitter, that is a much more even balance. And so, yeah, maybe that's an oddity that, on balance have Democratic leaning views or progressive stances on the issues. But the finding a way to communicate that stuff while being true to what you care about, but to do it in a way that uses humor or that embraces certain other people who feel differently and allows you to sort of grow the number of people who you are genuinely friends with in the political sphere, regardless of their views, I think is one of that's my favorite thing about social media, or at least about Twitter. Like, I don't find that to be true with Facebook, because on Facebook I just post like other stupid, stuff. Not
pictures of your
stuff.
Twin daughters not pictures, dressing up as the shiny
twins. Yeah, exactly. Those aren't stupid things. My daughters and their pictures are super, but not political, non-political stuff. I think that there are probably people who, I think we all get a little more mature and we use these things at times to, before we really understand the impact they have, to do things that may be genuinely hurtful to people. And I've probably been there in the past, and that's something that I've sought not to do, that hopefully, we can use humor to sort of defuse the tensions that comes with politics and understand that there are people who we can like very much from a personal standpoint that we share very little with from a political or ideological perspective.
It's kind of interesting. I like to think that Twitter helps us differentiate people who can maybe step back and not take themselves so seriously, especially in this building. I mean, you walk into this building, it's literally made of marble. You want to take yourself super seriously. Maybe you shouldn't sometimes. And I would like to think that if Twitter existed in the age of like Dick Webster, maybe he would have stepped back and been like, "Huh, Jeff!" Exclamation point. And thought it was funny.
Do you have are you a 280 character tester?
Because no
I
way.
Think you're the only person on Twitter that I think that would be good for. I, for some reason, am a 280
really?
Character tester.
That's awesome. Have you
I don't know.
Have you
no,
ever
what would
above
I say?
140?
No.
I don't want it, honestly. Like, I think it's kind
it's
of
a burden.
Me out.
It would be a burden.
It bumps me out. Like, I think that it's better. Like, I am better for the stuff that I put together by virtue of having that 140 character. You just have to be tighter. You have to think
right.
more fully about not using wasted words that shouldn't mean a lot of things that you care about, probably.
That's
as
the value of
journalists.
Twitter over Facebook, right? Because
right.
you have to be succinct and brief,
totally.
And you can't
yeah,
go on a long, psychotic ramble. Like, you can on Facebook.
Yeah, I mean,
that's all Facebook.
I can still do.
You see a lot of psychotic rambles on Facebook, I have to say.
You can still do never ending threads on Twitter if you want to. And the people who don't mute the word thread, we'll see those things. But if you're like me and anything that shows thread in it, you just mute that, then you don't ever have to see that. So,
yeah. Well, I do think it's time, sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce, for Becky's five questions.
Fantastic supporters of
LaunchCode,
by the way. So.
And the Amazon bid. So
yes.
I'm really sorry, Hart, and all y'all. I would love to see Amazon come to Missouri.
It would be a game changer. I can't imagine a singular thing. My hope is that we see the opportunity of Amazon coming, and we continue to progress over the next 10 years. So when the next Amazon comes around, we are ready for them.
Absolutely.
Okay, so your five questions. Question one. In your opinion, what is the best invention of all time?
Can we answer that on the air, on the podcast?
No. Greg Keller is calling me right now, and I don't know that it's wise to put Keller and Mazur on speaker. I'm going to say no. I'm going to decline that call.
Becky's vetoing.
I'm vetoing a Keller-Mazur conversation on the podcast.
That would be
There'd probably be a lot of bleeps.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No. So question one. In your opinion, what is the best invention of all time?
The best invention of all time.
And you can define the criteria of what makes it the best.
Yeah. That's really... I mean... I think the cop-out, but the right answer is, like, the wheel. Pretty crucial. Ancient.
The wheel.
I was going to say spoon.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
I was going to say the printing press. I thought that was a pretty, but wheel and spoon up there.
That's true. This is just, like, who knows about technology stuff like inventions. I don't know. I mean, probably in terms of like the most life-changing modern era thing, like the handheld supercomputer and like the iPhone is probably the most amazing invention if you consider like where we are today with that stuff compared to where we were 10 years ago, even just like how it changed just almost every facet of your life, your work, and just minute-to-minute living is probably the most impactful invention. Whether that's good or bad, anybody's guess.
I was trying to explain to my stepson the other day that my iPhone has multiple times over more intelligence and capacity than the computer that sent us to the moon in 1969. And then we watched Freaky Friday and he didn't know what a PDA and a pager were. And I had to explain it and he was just like, why didn't they just get like an iPhone?
Yeah. I was thinking the other day, you know, the save icon, the floppy disk. Kids these days probably have no idea where that comes from.
Did you see that thing? That there was this story and it was like this dude had one of these 3.5-inch floppy disks and the kid was like, oh, you 3D printed the save icon off the iOS desktop. Like, that's what the kid thought he was looking at. Yeah,
kids
so
these
totally.
Days, bless their hearts.
Yeah.
Second question. So a lot of our listeners probably know that you were married to the smart, beautiful Mindy Mazur.
Photogenic woman.
How did you meet Mindy? How did you and Mindy meet?
We met in college. No, so we weren't really in politics.
Your hair, the hair had that, like it was greased back with
absolutely.
That one little tendril,
had,
like your wedding
still
picture.
Had,
show
my hair, my hairline wasn't in full retreat yet. So, interesting story, which I probably shouldn't share here, but I will. Our first date, I picked Mindy up at her sorority house on the Mizzou campus in a car that I'd stolen out of the parking lot. It was like a 1971 convertible Cadillac, and I pulled up in the lot and like knocked on the door. I won't, to save her chapter of the shame and embarrassment, I won't mention what chapter it was on the air, but knocked on the door to pick her up. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm here. And I like to complete the story, but that was like the first date, and we ultimately got married, had kids. It's great. We've been married for more than 15 years now, but like she had to drive the stolen Cadillac home at the end of the date that night. So, but yeah, that's sort of how we met. So, like, how could you
modern day fairy tale?
I'm beginning to think that like
we had no Facebook, no cell phones. So
maybe the marriages today that had like the most red flags at the beginning, maybe those are the more successful ones.
I don't think that's good advice for our listeners. Probably red flags proceed.
it's almost like rationalizing
bad behavior, but that's probably a different podcast.
I was
thinking
about all the red flags my husband gave me the other day, and he tells this story, and I'm like, you know what? If Jeff Mazur stole a car for his first date with his wife, I think we're gonna be okay.
Yeah, it worked out, right?
Probably. Yeah, that worked out. That worked
I'm
out
literally
really well.
Taking that to heart. Right?
Okay, question three. So obviously, your Twitter is a huge conversation topic. Who is your favorite person to follow on Twitter? Who is everybody's favorite's favorite?
I can't confine it to
is
one
it Peter
person.
Kinder?
It used to be. I think that's no longer true. Like, I genuinely enjoyed that. Like, this is such a Homer thing to say, and like I'm on this podcast and whatever, but like I genuinely enjoy Scott Fawn's Twitter because like it's so intentionally stupid in a lot of ways, but really fairly smart for the same reasons.
Yeah.
And so I enjoy and appreciate.
He's on brand. Scott is on brand always.
Yeah, just a simple.
He's on brand. He's smart in that
totally.
Regard.
I like, and again, this name is fresh in my mind, perhaps because he just called. Like, for totally different reasons, I love the Greg Keller Twitter feed because he throws out tweets at various times that are just like, I was just looking at my Rolodex, and my breath was taken away by the depth and breadth of my Rolodex. And he'll just like tweet that out. You know, like hashtag blessed or whatever. And like, that's why I follow all the politics stuff that Greg tweets. I don't agree with any of that stuff. And, you know, I don't care about it. But it's like the once every couple weeks, like self-praise tweets, and I'm like, yes, this is why I follow Greg.
Which Meg is Keller funny because I found Greg to be a very gracious, humble person one-on-one. His public persona is very different. Now we're complimenting Greg way too much, so we need to move on.
But I think there's a whole other, my true favorites that probably are meaningless to anybody who listens to this podcast is like a lot of people in like the weird Twitter genre. So like I probably shouldn't say these names on the air, but like at Dog Boner and like at Bronze Camera
Jeff or Greg Keller posted a picture of like his high school prom or something. I think he tweeted it. He also has Epic Hair. Oh, yeah. I've saved it to a special folder on my computer just for a rainy day.
But there's like this whole I know you're trying to change the topic here, but those are like some of my favorites for sure. Like these weird Twitter guys.
No, but I'm coming back to
that. There's more mainstream weird Twitter guys like Mobute and you know whatever. But check these guys out because they got good takes on politics that align with my views of the world and just like some funny and brutally ridiculous stuff.
Question four. What is the best compliment you've ever received?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's happened like 4 or 5 times. People have told me, genuinely, I'm not just saying this, like, but they're like, it's funny. This was funny what you did, or you're a funny guy, or whatever. That's like always the best thing for me. Like, I get all this other stuff, like, you're good at your job, or you're a good dad. Like, the hell with that, right? Like, you're funny. Like, you did a funny tweet about, you know, whatever, some numbskull, and like, this is great. And so that always is the one that like makes me smile the most if somebody's like genuinely got a kick out of something that I put on Twitter or did somewhere else.
I will say the tweet that you made like an hour ago, it made me laugh audibly and to the point that Ben was uncomfortable because I laugh so rarely.
So I want to spin off of that. What do you think is one of the funniest tweets you've ever sent out? What was one that was like, oh, got a ton of likes, or everyone was like, Jeff, you're hysterical.
I can't say on air. No. This is horrible. I can't think of a particular instance, probably because they all fade in reflection because none of them were actually that good. Like, there are a handful of tweets out there that are genuinely that are tweets of people who I don't even know that I just seen on Twitter that are genuinely things that I will carry with me to my grave because they're so great. Like, one is like, and these aren't mine, but I'm just talking about Twitter stuff now. So these are the tweets that I wish I could do. But it was like, you know, it's like a bracket, and the guy says, mysterious old woman flips over tarot card that shows person that looks exactly like me crashing hot air balloon into power lines. Me, is that good? comic things that I always carry with me. So I aspire to do tweets like that. But the thing that I've really found, what I view to be some of the best, the most incisive, the most cutting, the sort of funniest and subversive tweets about like in the Missouri politics sphere are the ones that get almost zero interaction. But I know people are like direct messaging that tweet around or like text me, you know,
that tweet,
right? But no way are they going to like, certainly never retweet it, but not even like it because I know people are trolling likes.
Yeah.
So there are ones there that you always like cringe a little bit. I'm like, oh man, this tweet got zero interactions, but I know like the real reason that. So it wasn't because it sucked. It was
so next time my tweet gets zero likes, I'm like, Major probably loves it. Somebody out there likes it. Everyone's just too afraid.
I should have came armed with what I think are my best tweets, but I suspect if I had one that I thought was really good,
feel free to go back through and retweet.
I will copy you guys on.
So we have a sixth question technically, but we're fun. So what is one of your favorite smells? Felt like that was a good way to wrap this up.
Yeah, perfect. No, it is.
Is it Chocolat du Ed Martin?
I breakfast smells. Like you like walk
like
downstairs
bacon.
And there's bacon and coffee brewing. Like I can't, that's like a rewarding smell and a homey smell and a smell that tells you that like you didn't do this, so there's somebody else in the world who cares about you and is looking out for you. That like makes you feel really good. And then also like gasoline, obviously. Everybody loves to huff gasoline.
Gasoline,
right?
Is pretty legit. I will say. I agree with you. So yeah, that was our six questions, I guess.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the hashtag Middle Edge podcast, and thank you to our guest, Jeff Mazur. And of course, thank you to our sponsor, the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce, who I hope is still our sponsor after I got her Amazon bid. This is Rachel Herndon Dunn, and I'll be back soon with the next episode.